Yo, yo, everybody. Here is another episode of the Mind Body Marathon. And we are on Route 90, heading back from the Boston Marathon to Cleveland, and going currently 77 miles an hour. Inspired by what? Jerry Seinfeld? What, comedians in a car? I had really no other time to cram this interview in, or this talk about the Boston Marathon. Just with life and immediately jumping back into work and going into surgery and doing some stuff. So I just didn't have time to put together my two cents on the Boston Marathon. So here we are doing it on the way home.
On the way home.
Driving through upstate New York from Boston to Cleveland. So yeah, man, it was your first Gio here is George Aaron Holt. Goes by Gio, has been on the show before, actually. So he is second time guest. And it was his first time, actually, at a major marathon.
That's correct.
You'd been to some other marathons like Akron and Cleveland and whatnot, but in some trail races, which is more your liking. But what'd you think of the major?
You know, it was overwhelming at times, but the excitement and parts of it was just like unorganized chaos that seemed to work.
Yeah.
But a few of the things that really stood out to me was how friendly all the support staff were. And
yeah, friendly in Boston people are not usually go hand in hand, which is awesome that you had that experience.
Oh, see, now that's surprising because, you know, when I went into Starbucks, I think I just wanted to step out of the crowd. And the lady was very friendly. Are you using the restroom or do you want something to drink? And I said, probably a cup of coffee. She goes, oh, well, over here. You know, just she went out of her way. But it was very enjoyable, overwhelming in the crowd.
Where were you at in for the race itself?
I was on Commonwealth Avenue, about a half a mile from the finish line, where your guys are coming down and then you curve and go up.
I was just before we turn onto Hereford.
Yes.
Yeah, that's about a half mile in.
And that was
the finish.
And that was a neat experience because you know you're kind of in sardine world now with all these humans. But, you know, you ask some questions, and you kind of build a little community there. In fact, some of the ladies that were beside me looked up what your bib number was, and they started tracking you for me because my app, for some reason, it wasn't working. And 2 miles, you were about 2 miles out, and the lady beside me goes, oh, your friend's coming, about 2 miles, da-da-da-da-da. And then about a half mile, she goes, about a half mile out, and then all of a sudden she goes, here comes your friend, you know. And then I'm taking pictures, and they all got excited and were cheering, because I don't know whether because I got the pictures or you went by. But
I'm so bummed I didn't even see you.
Well, probably by that time.
I was suffering quite a bit.
Well, I didn't know that, but you were probably moving at a pretty good pace. And and there was a group of guys that came around with you, ahead of you, and then you were kind of, there were just a few guys with you. So
one of the many groups that was passing me.
Well.
Yeah, so it was a good day. Weather-wise, it was about mid to high 40s, partly cloudy, tailwind most of the way, so that was cool. And, you know, I think that was my second time doing Boston. I had done it in 2022, so 4 years ago. In that race, I don't remember it being as crowded as this one. This one felt like it had much better crowd support. There was definitely more buzz in the air. Like, I felt like the energy on the course was so much more electric this time versus 4 years ago. And the weather was almost identical, so it wasn't even a weather thing. Like, it was raining or something like that. So I was very happy with the experience. I mean, I think, you know, I'd come out of the first race thinking like, oh, I think Boston's maybe a little bit overrated. And then coming out of this one, I'm like, no, it's pretty awesome, actually. The course is really fun. You know, the fans were just awesome. It just was absolutely bonkers near the finish line. And I didn't remember that either. Maybe I was hurting in a different way during that first race and wasn't paying attention to some of these things, but definitely noticed that today.
Well, I don't know about the other parts of the course, but where I was at, I mean, it was packed. I mean, it was probably, I would say roughly 15, maybe 20 feet of human beings behind me.
Oh, geez.
And I'm thinking, okay, when he goes by me, how are you going to get out of this mess? You know, but it worked out well because, you know, there was an aisle behind all the crowd. But even getting to that point, there was just a sea of humanity. It would be hard to be lost because you could tell people were going somewhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, you kind of get sucked into it. I mean, I had an idea where I was going, but like I said, I don't know about the rest of the course, but it was lively and loud where I was at. And every time somebody came around that did any kind of motion, like raising their hands or shaking their fist or whatever, the crowd got even louder. And there were times where my ears actually hurt because people, it was so loud, you felt like you were in a scream tunnel.
So did you see the leaders come by?
Yes.
So there was, on the men's side, there was a course record.
Yes. And when that guy came by, he was all by himself. And I mean, he just, when he came around the corner, I mean, he was flying. And I looked at the ladies beside me. I said, wow, that is so impressive. This guy is flying. And apparently he set the course record.
Yeah.
Wow.
201 something.
Jeez.
So again, this is right after the race. So we haven't really been able to validate everything. I definitely, so my race in particular was good. It started out okay. Like, I have this bad tendency of not looking at my watch, which I go the exact opposite direction of most runners, where they're just obsessive about their watch. And today would have been a good day for me to do that because I ended up looking at my watch. I think the first time I looked at it was 10 miles in. And I like to try to, I'm like a delayed gratification kind of person. Like, I like to wait, you know, like just to push it off as long as I can, feel out my body. And I just thought I was running slower, and I wasn't. I was running like 6:30 pace. And that was way too fast. Like, it just was way too fast. I was talking to you last night. I had done the calculations on training for this race. And in December, I ran like 50-something miles. In January, I ran like 70-something. But then I did run the Disney Marathon with my wife in December or January. So that kind of accounted for a decent chunk of that, literally a third of the volume of that month. Then in February, I only ran 50 miles again for the whole month. And then in March, I ran 100, which still is not all that much, relatively speaking, for training for a marathon. And yeah, so I averaged 18 miles a week heading into this race. So this was probably the absolute lowest I had ever run coming into a marathon. And I just knew I was going to just jog this one and have a good time. So when I started out in the first 10 miles and I was running 6:30 pace, I was like, it did not feel hard. And it's muscle memory, right? You know, you kind of just get out there and you just feel in rhythm. And I'm in the race setting, so this is what I'm used to. But I really shouldn't have done that. I should have literally forced myself to run 7-minute pace early on and been looking at my watch like a hawk, because I was definitely not prepared to run 6:30 pace for this race, considering I had done legitimately no workouts and only 18 miles a week since December.
Caught you at the end, didn't it?
It definitely caught me at the end. So about mile 20, you know, I was really like, okay, yeah, this is definitely getting pretty bad. Because you get through, like, you know, you have kind of three big hills in Newton Hills. You know, they start in 17, so you get a decent hill there. Then you kind of get another pretty healthy hill, 18, 19. And that hill really got me. I was, you know, kind of limping at the top of it, essentially, my Achilles and my post hip, and I just was kind of locking up a little bit. And I still had heartbreak to go. And, you know, handled heartbreak shockingly better than I thought I would. But when I got to 21 at the top, I was zero energy. And every single mile from that point on, I was running slower and slower and slower. I went from running, you know, maybe 7:10 on heartbreak for mile 21 to 7:30, then 7:45, then 8 minute, then 8:30. And boy, I tell you, in that last 2 miles, it was really, really difficult to not walk because I was nauseous. I was dizzy. you know, I was cramping. if I like pushed too hard, you know, my calf would like start to seize a little bit, or my hamstring would start to seize. And I was just absolutely inadequately prepared for this race. And I set myself up for failure quite a bit. And I finished, I don't even know my time, 3:07 or something like that. I didn't really even know what I ran time-wise. I'll obviously know once I get home and look through the data of everything. I mean, it's not even worth talking about now because it just was so bad. I went through the half in let me think about this, 1:28.
Yeah.
Which set me up for 2:56 pace. So that tells you that I added 10 or 11 minutes on the back half of the course. So the last 13 miles, I added 11 minutes. So I literally almost ran a 50 seconds slower per mile on the second half of the course. But and most of that was the last 5 miles.
But weren't you planning on doing 3-something?
Yeah, I
that's what I was looking for you to come in.
Yeah, I was kind of planning on running, you know, 3:10, really.
Yeah.
3:05 to 3:10. And my ultimate goal was, and I even said this in the shower this morning when I was like getting prepared and mentally thinking about the race, I'm like, my ultimate goal was I just wanted to feel really good the last 5 miles. And that is literally the exact opposite of what happened. This is the worst I felt in any marathon in the last 5 miles of a race. Part of it is just I was just too cocky. You know, I thought I had everything under control and I didn't need to look at my watch. I didn't need to pace myself, and I was just kind of feeling it out. And pride comes before a fall. So yeah, I finished the race and then get my medal, take a picture with Joey Phillips, who hands out medals every year. He's a Akron native that I know through the running community, and he volunteers every year. Big Boston guy, big Boston marathon guy, and got my medal with him, took a photo. Then I was just like, dude, it's starting to hit me. Like, you know how it just hits you like a couple minutes after you finish?
Right.
And I was shivering, you know, because I'm such a freeze baby. And then I kind of was just really struggling to make it to the family friends area, which is where I was going to meet you.
Right.
And I had said I'd meet you about 1:15, 1:30.
Yes.
And I was kind of trying to pull out my phone to actually communicate with you. And all of a sudden this guy starts talking to me and I'm like, yo, dude, I gotta lay down. And then I laid down and then there's all these medical aides just kind of going back and forth, just making sure the runners are like kind of moving in the right direction. Get out of here, you know, or here's the food, like keep moving. And when I laid down, they panicked. And the next thing you know, I woke up in the medical tent in a cot.
Yeah, much fun.
So I literally passed out. I can't even believe it. I passed out and I had fluids and I was shivering like crazy. And they were like, what's your name? Do you know where you're at? Like, who's your emergency contact? They're like grilling me with all these questions. And I could not for the life of me open my eyes. I was just like, dude, I'm really struggling right now. Just give me a minute. And then it kind of took, I was probably in there for 45 minutes or so is what we had thought.
I think at least, yeah.
45 minutes to an hour. And, you know, they made, you know, it's funny because the doctors come over and they're like, so where are you staying? You know, who are you here with? I was like, oh, I'm here with my friend George. And actually, when I was out, they picked up the phone from me, right?
Somebody called me.
And well, you called us.
Well, I had called you to get a hold of you, and you didn't answer, which doesn't surprise me, and I left a text telling you where I was at the family meetup place. And then probably, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes later, I got a call from a medical guy and said that you were in the tent, but it kept breaking out, in and out, losing coverage, and all I remember was Copley Square and I think Tent A or something like that, so I made my way to the tent, and oh no, he's down at the other one. And finally I did get down there, and the lady was very nice and walked me down there to the, got me through the security thing, and then I told your name to another guy that was down there, and he went in and checked on you, and So I was waiting out there, and I think maybe 10 minutes later, you come walking out. And
That's when I was down and out.
Ooh.
Yeah, so then I wake up, and then, like, I'm surrounded by all these people, and they're taking my vitals, and they're basically like, your pulse ox is really low, your blood pressure is really low, but everything else comes out clean. They actually did take, somehow they drew blood and then they ran it, and they said my electrolytes were fine in my blood.
That quick, huh?
Yeah, that quick after they put the IV in. So then that way they can medically justify once I came to leaving. And then I perked up, you know, real quick. And then the medical doctor was like having a long conversation with me and was like, dude, do not drive back tonight. He's like, it's not a smart move. Just get out of the city and stay in Worcester, you know, stay about, you know, an hour outside the city. Like, just get a hotel. Like, do not drive back to Ohio tonight. So here we are.
We obviously didn't listen to the doctor.
But I looked pretty bad when I came out of the tent, didn't I?
I want to make a comment on that. He had a nice warm white blanket, almost pure white, and it matched his skin. So you did not look good.
Yeah, which is amazing because they were like, you look really, really good, like compared to when you first got here.
Well, I'm sure. Well, the fact that you were able to get up and walk. Out,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know when I got revived. Like, I feel like once I got to the car and I got out all my wet clothes off.
I think probably I could sense it probably about 10 minutes after we started driving.
Yeah.
You could almost see the life coming back, if you will.
Yeah.
And I kept asking, are you all right? Are you right? Yeah, fine. I just need to keep walking. Kind of like a zombie walk, you know.
I got some Starbucks. We just had some Chick-fil-A.
Recovering.
So we're on the road to recovery.
But I do have to say this. I am so impressed with how well he has recovered from when I saw him coming out of that medical tent and talking with the doctors, and to see him now, that's pretty impressive because, yeah, he was a mess. Nothing personal.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just it. Like, why was I a mess? I have no idea what went awry. I was surmising with the doctors. I was like, I think actually, because they were like, does this happen to you often? Is this your first marathon? Are you novice? Like, no, I'm actually a chiropractor, I'm a physician. Like, this is kind of embarrassing, to be honest with you. And I was like, honestly, the only other time this happened is my debut marathon in 2006 in Chicago. And that was driving rain. And it was 40 degrees and it was so cold and I just couldn't get warm. And something about my fluids dropping and the cold, potentially even electrolytes, maybe I need more electrolytes than I think I do. Like, some combination of that with the cold just tips me over. Because, again, that's only happened to me twice. And if I'm in a warm weather marathon, like, I'm fine. I'm cruising. Yeah. If I'm in, you know, even just moderate temperature, 50, 60 degrees, like, I'm fine. But something about being in the 40s and just getting that bone-chilling cold just sets me off. And I think part of it is, because it is so cold, I don't think to drink fluids as much as I should.
It's possible.
You know, because I'm just like, you know, it's not like I'm sweating really a ton, but, you know, my hat was soaked by the end, so I definitely was obviously sweating. And it's definitely obviously deceiving, but I just made a lot of rookie mistakes.
Well, I think where it caught you at the end was from what happened the first 10 miles.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, again, just that haughty nature. And I really should have just been following my watch and been looking down more. Because I did actually have my GPS, because I usually run my marathons with my Timex. And to be honest with you, that might have served me better because I split every mile or every 5K, so that I'm a little bit more likely to be teased by that and look at that split. But, you know, with having my Apple Watch, my GPS on today, I just didn't do it. I just thought I was being cool and I'm not gonna look until 10 miles. And
a victim of technology.
I mean, still kind of have that old school mindset of just racing with the Timex and just hit my actual splits.
But I remember last night we were talking about the weather, and I said what the temperature was, and I said, I think that's not an ideal temperature to run. And then you told me, no, I like it hot. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh.
It definitely wasn't hot. But I definitely would say this Boston has moved up in my tally of my favorite marathons. I don't know what it was about 22. I just didn't have as, even though I was wrecked at this for this one, and obviously ended up in the medical tent. I still had a much more positive experience about it. I mean, I think I knew I was hitting the wall pretty bad, and I willingly slowed down. So I did take in the crowds a little bit more. I got some videos. You know, I was able to film some things. took in the atmosphere and the sensibility of the race a little bit more, and just paid attention to some of the details along the way, and really just felt good about that experience. And you know, I'm gonna want to come back and make that third time in charm and actually run it right next time, and not blow up like I did the past two times. But it's actually interesting, because most people talk about with Boston, you know, you got to be careful with the downhills. And really, honestly, the first mile is the only one that's overtly downhill. Maybe a little bit later, I think 15, 16, there's another decent slope down. But for the most part, it's bacon strips from mile 2 to 17. And you're just a gentle up and gentle down. You're just kind of riding the wave of it just not really being terribly flat. And I did feel like there was thicker crowds, like the Wellesley crowd felt larger today. The Scream Tunnel. Got a great video of that. I also felt like a couple other cities, like Natick and Framingham and stuff like that, a couple of the other cities brought some pretty good energy. Noticed a ton of kids out on the course today, like wanting to get their hands slapped way more than when I had first done it. Maybe I was just so much more locked in racing. So I high-fived a ton of kids, that's for sure. So just an overall good experience. And I would say probably my second favorite major. Now, again, I'm going to do Chicago again this fall. My first favorite major is New York. I'll do Chicago again this fall, and we'll kind of see how that compares. I think that's changed since I did LATS 20 years ago in 2006. But, you know, Boston brought it today, man. I was really, really happy with the energy.
It was a lot of fun for my being a spectator. That's the first really big marathon I've been to. And boy, it's a huge difference. And I could see where the crowd would get you going, because it was electric where I was at.
Yeah.
And it was almost constant, especially when runners were coming through almost every 5-10 seconds. It was just constant.
Would you ever want to do a race like this, a major? Because I know you're a big trail guy, and you kind of want to go off into the woods and do your urban detox.
Well, but at my pace, I don't think they'd want that. You know, would I like to do it? Would I like to run Boston? Sure, if you're going to keep the course open for 7 hours, I could probably finish ahead of that, but I don't think they want to do that.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to do a major, but I'm good doing trail races and the smaller marathons. That I'm grateful to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the other thing too, took the bus out both races to the start. Thought that was a good experience. When you get there and you get off the buses, if you go to your right instead of to your left to the main big athlete area, especially if it's a decent day out and it's not raining, there's no tent there, but there's a lot less people, and the porta potties are just in and out. If you take the left and you go into the main area of the Athletes Village, because there's like kind of separated like two kind of main areas, the one that's to your, if you're walking towards it, the one that's to your right is definitely less populated. You can just have a little bit more chill environment back there. It's a lot less people. You know, I was wave one, and so obviously there's a lot less people in general there, But I would definitely suggest taking the buses. I mean, they're there for a reason. It just helps with the logistics. I mean, it takes like 45 minutes to drive to the start. I mean, it's a far drive. It's all highway, and then you get there, and you know, the bus is warm, obviously, so you don't have to be standing out in the cold and all that the whole time. But that was a decent experience, too. I paid a lot more attention to that one this year, and I definitely really enjoyed that smaller athlete village section that's off to your right. And those little things kind of matter when you're prepping for the race, you know. Just the other thing to consider, too, if you've never done Boston before, is that you can legitimately keep your clothes on till you are in the corral. You do not have to take your clothes off. In the athletes' village, they do pressure you to kind of do that. You can take your bag, you can take your clothes, you can take your trash, you can take absolutely everything with you to the corral. You do not need to take any of that off and be cold, because from the athletes' village to the corral for the start line, it's about a mile walk. I mean, it's about a 15-minute walk, and it's a decent hike. And that's just not the time and place to be cold and shivering and just when you're ready to run a marathon. This year was interesting too, because it was a 130th anniversary of Boston. So it's the longest running marathon, continuous marathon. So that's kind of their claim to fame. It's one of the reasons why it's such a famous race. And they flew a bomber over the start, which I have a video of that too. And it flew really low. You saw that?
Yes. Yes.
They flew. Did they fly to the finish line area?
I'm not sure. But I saw a bomber coming over.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy low. It was like pretty awesome to see, actually. And what was really cool to see all of the foreigners so excited about it, because, you know, like America loves its toys, its military toys. And they were like, just completely blown away to see a huge yeah. plane like that fly so low. I thought that was a pretty funny experience, because I hadn't really thought of it through the lens of people coming in from other countries.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. But it's also, so Gio here, he didn't actually do it, but this is a 2006 or 2026 jacket.
I was going to do a disclaimer on that. I didn't earn this jacket. It was supposed to be, it was his. I was supposed to give it to him when he was done to have something warm. Okay.
But whenever you get to a 10th anniversary, they will do the jacket colors, the actual Boston Marathon colors, which is the blue and the yellow. Now, a lot of times you see people with Boston Marathon jackets that are different colors and maybe a wild color scheme. In that instance, it's not a 10th anniversary, and so it's just going to be whatever color scheme they come up with for that year. But whenever it's like 120th, 130th, and then now coming up in 10 years, 140th anniversary, they will dump these jackets out. So it's pretty cool that I was able to get a blue and yellow one. Those are kind of prized possessions. So I was pretty excited about that. Just a little tidbit if you didn't know from Boston knowledge.
And one other thing I found out, that they shut down the whole city. Nobody goes to school. The kids don't go to school.
Yeah, Patriots Day.
Yeah, they shut everything down. The Red Sox play. And I was talking with one of the safety guys, and I said, when will the city be open again? He goes, we'll start having it up and running at 5:30, which is amazing when you think about all the closures that they have to do, that they'll have it up running in that quick of a time.
Yeah. It's pretty shocking, actually, too, because for the vast majority of the course, you're just running in front of people's houses. Yeah. You know, you're not running through a city like Boston. You're running... basically, like, they drive you out 26 miles into some neighborhood, and then you just run a two-lane highway all the way through until you get to the finish. It widens a bit, you know, once you get into some major intersections, but for the most part, like, 90% of the race is a two-lane highway, and people are just literally out in front of their houses cheering, which is so cool. It's such, like, a hometown feel. I really, really enjoyed that about this event this year.
And I think going into it, a couple of times you had commented along the lines, you really want to have a good time. You really want to enjoy this one.
Yeah.
And I think that's why your original goal was not as fast as you took, you know, were doing.
That I went out for. Yeah, because I went out in 2:56 pace for the half.
Yeah.
And probably more like 2:52 pace through 10 miles. Really, I was like, once I got that 10-mile split, I'm like, I definitely need to slow down. So even that 5K from the 10 miles to the half marathon, I had slowed down even still, and it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, you were about 25 minutes ahead of what you wanted to be.
Pretty close, yeah. Yeah. Any final tidbits from the race, from your race experience?
Well, if you get a chance, whether you were going to run it or as a spectator, don't pass it up. It's an event. It's. I'm glad I did it.
Yeah, I'm glad you came.
I am too. Thank you, Brian.
I was driving because it was a quick in and out, because, like I said, I have a lot going on in my life. And that's partially why I didn't train so much, was we opened a second location for the clinic for Ohio Sports Chiropractic and Rehab. We were adopting a kid, a little five-year-old. We're, just a lot of family drama with that. Just some the ups and downs of life, and that's ultimately why I didn't really adequately prepare for this race.
But let me.
So when I threw it out there for you to come, like, it was pretty awesome that you accepted.
Let me interrupt you there. 3-something marathon is pretty impressive, no matter how much you've trained.
Yeah.
And you had very light training. I think that's awesome that you can do that with that little training.
Yeah, I'm very blessed to still be able to do it. I'm very blessed that, my injuries, quote unquote, my Achilles, my post-hib, my hamstrings, things that I've kind of nursed along over the last, 7-10 years, that they held up. They certainly didn't feel great at the start of the race, and they kind of loosened up a little bit, and I was able to kind of fight through those. So that's why I keep doing these things. Obviously I've run a 218 marathon. I've had some, as my wife puts it, I've had a lot of pinnacle things in running. I've done a lot of really high-end things in running, and I've had a lot of great experiences. And I just love to keep throwing my hat in the ring and just having fun with it. And today I just wanted to take it all in, and I took it all in quite a different fashion than I had originally thought I would.
Yeah.
So thank you guys for listening. Reach out if you have any questions or comments. If you want any suggestions from the course, any suggestions on if you're going to do Boston for the first time, please reach out. And I will be back, and hopefully my third time I will actually figure out how to run this darn course correctly without sabotaging myself. But some of that requires some actual training.
You'll figure it out.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Till another day.
Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries. Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it.